Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody. As Richard was just telling you, tonight at 7 o'clock, WNYC and New York One will air the first official campaign finance board mayoral debate. I'll be one of the questioners, along with David Chen from the New York Times, and my first three guests today from our debate partner, New York One, Era Lewis, host of Road to City Hall, who will be moderator of tonight's debate, Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Pura Politica on their Spanish-language station, New York One Noticias, and New York One political reporter Grace Rao. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
And listeners, you can call in right now with questions you would like to hear asked at tonight's Democratic mayoral primary debate. I've already picked out two listener questions, I will let you know, that I will probably ask in my turns tonight. What else do you want to know about the candidates that you don't already know? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Errol, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good. So, you know, many New Yorkers who are not constant watchers of your show or listeners to this one are probably going to be paying close attention to the candidates, let's say, other than Anthony Weiner, for the first time during tonight's debate. How do you expect the leading candidates to kind of reintroduce themselves to a wider audience tonight?
You know, I actually don't think they are going to be thinking of tonight's event in that way, that, oh, hey, this is my chance to talk to people who haven't seen this before. These uh-huh. folks have been living with this inside their heads and with all of their being and all of their friends and all of their family for over a year now. So I suspect that they're going to just get back to the business of the day, which is, you know, trying to grind out a victory 20 days from now. And that, at this stage of the game, frankly, involves, in many cases, attacking somebody else who's going to be on that stage. And it may look awful to first-time viewers. It may look like they've walked into the middle of some ongoing fight or, a bad marriage or something like that, you know, when you overhear something like that in a restaurant. But for the candidates, I think there's too much on the line for them to back off at this point. And I don't think they're going to be focusing so much on, hey, I'm Christine Quinn or I'm Bill de Blasio. Here's what I'm all about. I think it's going to be more like this guy on the other side of the stage is a bum.
A bad marriage, a bad polygamous marriage, we should say. You married to six other Democrats who want to be mayor. So, Juan, there are two runoff slots with presumably de Blasio, Quinn, and Thompson vying for those slots, and one will be left behind at the end of that game of musical chairs. So from a horse race standpoint, and picking up on what Errol just said about attacks, do you expect to see these candidates going after one of the others in that group in particular who they see as vulnerable?
Yes, and they already started this morning. This morning we saw ads coming from both camps, the de Blasio camp and the Quinn camp. The de Blasio ad is titled Lucky to Have Ray Kelly, and it goes against Kristen Quinn. And Kristen Quinn's ad is the tale of two de Blasios. I think they're setting the stage also with that Maureen Dowd column in the New York Times and this morning where de Blasio's wife is basically saying that maybe Kristen Quinn is not that kind of person that someone can approach to talk about children's issues. And the Quinn campaign responds automatically saying that that's offensive. I think they're setting the stage already for tonight.
So the de Blasio ad that you referenced, which I haven't seen yet, lucky to have Ray Kelly, is that Christine Quinn has gotten herself into kind of a political box with stop and frisk, saying early in the campaign that she would invite Ray Kelly to stay on as police commissioner, but now more recently with all the heat on stop and frisk, saying she would keep him on but force him to change that policy?
Correct, and it's really easy to be in that box. They've been running for months, and Ray Kelly, months ago, he was polling really well, and Quinn was running as a centrist candidate. Let's remember that. So keeping Ray Kelly made total sense a few months ago. Now, after the federal judge decision last week, then the story changes, and of course, he's trying to get out of that.
And on the other side, Grace, what is this tale of two de Blasios?
So this is the Quinn campaign's attempt to show that de Blasio is being disingenuous and that his history in politics is a history of flip-flopping. So they're highlighting some key areas that they say that he's flip-flopped in recent years, specifically term limits. When he was running for Speaker of the City Council, he was in favor of extending term limits. He then became one of the chief opponents to the Speaker's effort to extend term limits, giving the mayor a third term. They're focusing on that. They're focusing on member items, saying that when he was in the City Council, he didn't have a problem with member items.
That's the discretionary pots of money that each member of council can spend in their district as they see fit.
Right. It's sort of like the City Council's version of earmarks in Congress. And de Blasio, you know, spent, I think he had over $800,000 in member items one year. Now, as a candidate for mayor, he's calling for an end to all member items in the City Council, which is a way for him to bring up a scandal involving member items in the budget that took place under Speaker Quinn's leadership. And in this video, they also say that they're going to have more examples of this tale of two de Blasios as we get closer to the election. So this is just the beginning of a narrative that they're going to try to build up until the primary.
And so, Errol, how are they going to go after, or how have they been going after the third leg of that stool, Bill Thompson? Because I'm sure de Blasio and Quinn both want to knock him out of contention for the runoff.
Well, sure. There's a little indirect thing that's going on. The Thompson camp is very heated about it. I don't know if we're going to see any of that tonight, but in Bill de Blasio's, not the, his very latest ad, but in the one Dante, the one that everybody's been talking about, one of the – actually, I don't want to say the wrong one. Anyway, in one of the recent ads, Bill de Blasio says he's the only candidate who's sort of going to end the stop-and-frisk era. And that last word is, you know, I guess kind of a technical way of saying, you know, he's not claiming that he's the only one against the policy, because several of the candidates are, including Bill Thompson. The Bill Thompson camp has taken great umbrage at that. They say that it's an outright falsehood, that Bill Thompson has been clear that he's against stop and frisk as it's being applied and that he will change it. And they are accusing de Blasio of sort of falsely painting Bill Thompson into a policy that he just has never, you know, sort of been in favor of. So I think we're going to see some of that, you know, and there has been this jockeying. There was a time, you know, it's hard to sort of sort this out, but a few weeks ago, Bill de Blasio was saying on an almost daily basis that Bill Thompson needs to take a stand and support the IG bill and support the anti-profiling bill, and Thompson refused to do it. And, you know, the attack then, you know, quickly shifted onto some other topic, or Bill de Blasio at that point, I think, started getting arrested down at Long Island College Hospital and so forth. It's been a turbulent campaign, but the Thompson people feel that de Blasio has taken some unfair shots at them. They feel that he has said what they think is just some untruths about Thompson, and I'd be surprised if Thompson doesn't respond to that, perhaps even tonight.
Interesting. Of course, a lot of that stuff is pretty inside baseball compared to what most New Yorkers are concerned about: jobs with upward mobility, safety on the streets and dignity on the streets, good public schools for our kids.
Primary voters, though, Brian? We're talking about primary voters now.
You think they're not? Errol, you think they're not? You think they're so in these weeds?
Well, I think, you know, if you were to sort of rank the issues that primary voters, the people who are enough, you know, sufficiently energized Democrats that they're going to definitely come out on September 10th without any prodding from any of the candidates, I think that they would rank those issues probably different than a general election voter or somebody who is, you know, I mean, look, there's, what, 2.9 million registered Democrats in our city. And only, you know, best estimates, maybe 600 to 700,000 are going to come out on September 10th. What those people think is the mystery that all of these candidates are trying to unlock.
We're previewing tonight's mayoral candidates debate, Democratic primary mayoral candidates debates, with three of my co-questioners on the panel, all from New York One: Grace Rao, political reporter; Errol Lewis, host of Road to City Hall; and Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Put a Politica on the New York One Spanish language channel, New York One Noticias. 212-433-WNYC is our phone number. If you want to suggest a question for tonight's debate, 212-433-9692. And let's start with Brett in Manhattan. Hi, Brett. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
I wanted to see if you could ask the candidates if they could categorize themselves or rank themselves in terms of their liberalness. They've been all over the spectrum. Each one of them have been, you know, have started at centrist and moved left, or started at left and moved centrist. and I'd like to see where they think they stand against the others.
Brett, thank you. And I think they'll do some of this on their own. Juan, one of the thrusts of the de Blasio campaign, especially in recent months, has been to label him the most liberal or the most progressive candidate.
Yes, because that goes along the idea of if you're running within a primary, the Democratic primary, if you want to win that primary, you want to go all the way to the left before you go back to the center before the general election. However, Christine Quinn, like I said before, she started from a very centrist perspective. Also, because remember, the polls months ago weren't that mean to Ray Kelly or to even Mayor Bloomberg, and she was trying to bank on those accomplishments that now seem to be less important than we thought.
And John Liu, we should say, has also positioned himself as the most liberal candidate, and probably, if you look at the actual policies, is a higher minimum wage than the others are proposing, an end to stop and frisk rather than fixing it, no more subsidies to corporations of a large size who promise to create jobs rather than just being careful with those subsidies. So Liu has staked out positions like that. But I think de Blasio is kind of saying, well, I'm the most liberal candidate who can actually win.
Right, because John Liu has two major roadblocks on his path, and the campaign finance board decision not to grant him matching funds, and also the fact that there is some sort of scandal over him, over his financing. So his message is having a lot of trouble getting through some voters.
Nick in Cliffside Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Greetings. I think that the stop and frisk in the primary probably will be if not one of these central issues. And I think that the key to that issue is the recommendation in the judge's ruling that there be implemented a program of wearable cameras for the police, which I think would be a great idea for New York and for the country as a whole. I think that asking that question of the candidates will really cut to the core of which one of them is most seriously for truly reforming the police department and truly making police accountable. Not only will it result in fewer unnecessary stop and frisks, but I guarantee it'll result in fewer unnecessary killings of unarmed people.
Yeah, interesting. And Grace, we could even put that in the lightning round because it's a yes or no question. Do you support the wearing of lapel cameras by NYPD?
Right, and this is actually an idea that even before the judge's ruling had come up a little bit on the campaign trail. Anthony Weiner had proposed it as one of his ideas when it came to reforming the police department. But that, you know, raises an interesting point. They've all been talking about stop and frisk. With this judge's decision, there are now some very specific reforms on the table. So now it's not just kind of speaking in broad strokes about wanting to reform or mend, not end stop and frisk. Now we can really drill down into some of the specifics about how they're going to change it and what this policy would look like in a future mayoral administration.
Daniel in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. What question are you thinking of?
I would like to ask all the candidates who their major contributors are, and if any of them have ever received money from or are receiving money from Mayor Bloomberg.
Oh, that's an interesting question. And, Errol, it's a little tough to get at campaign finance in New York City mayoral contests. I think just because of the campaign finance laws, which they have to adhere to even qualify for this campaign finance board debate, that requires that they take many, many, many small donations. It means you have to kind of really look below the surface to see who's bundling these small campaign donations and on behalf of who, would you say?
Well, for sure. I mean, you don't really get a picture just from looking at the fact that they're in the campaign finance board program and have a lot of money. There are some people who use lots and lots of bundlers, and there are people who use hardly any, you know, and once in a while a story pops up about, you know, who's really relying on the political establishment to help, you know, sort of drag in these small contributions, and who's doing it in, you know, sort of pure grassroots fashion. I mean, one of the candidates who's going to be there, Sal Albanese, at almost every forum that I've seen him at, and that's maybe a dozen or so, has attacked Bill de Blasio for taking money from real estate interests. And, you know, look, this is the system working in the sense that if Albanese hadn't brought it up, I'm not sure I would have known that. And when he said it again and again and again and again, and de Blasio, it got to the point where he even just stopped responding to that. But, you know, you get to, for those for whom that would matter, you do get to see that there are differences, that, you know, not that being in a program does not in and of itself automatically insulate a candidate from political influence or from big money donors. It just doesn't. And you've got to sort of take that into account. The campaign finance board and the reformers who support it say that, well, this is better than the alternative. And then the skeptics say, well, you know, what have you really done? You just made it easier for a lot of wealthy, well-organized donors to take public money and multiply their influence, you know, using taxpayer money.
And so maybe it will come out a little bit tonight, the relationship or alleged relationship between real estate industry donations and their housing policies, Grace.
De Blasio also could be hammered. He's already been faced attacks from this, but from money that he's received from the taxi industry. He originally was in favor of the mayor's plan to expand taxi service to all five boroughs. Then it was revealed that he had taken, I think, over $100,000 from the yellow taxi industry and came out against the plan. So that's something that the Quinn campaign has been highlighting and that they're saying is an example of someone who's changed their position based on those campaign contributions.
This just in from the Associated Press. Bradley Manning has been sentenced to 35 years in prison for giving U.S. secrets to WikiLeaks. That's a lot of time for a 25-year-old. But then again, it's not as much time as a lot of people wanted. The biggest hawks on Bradley Manning and WikiLeaks wanted 60 years in prison or life in prison even, and 60. He could have gotten 60 for the conviction, and, of course, that would have made him 85 years old by the time he got out. Those who wanted the judge to be softer on Bradley Manning were hoping for 25 years, so I guess the judge kind of leaned a little bit in that direction, you might say. But still, Bradley Manning is going to spend the next 35 years behind bars. He would get out when he is 60. Errol, did I hear you just reacting to that?
Yeah, you know, you got to feel for somebody on just on a human level that, you know, there are a lot of people who think Bradley Manning has done a favor for the country. You know, whistleblowers are never perfect people. I think we're discovering that with Edward Snowden. But to the extent that they help the public know more about things that we need to know more about. As a journalist, we all value sources, and he's, you know, like sort of the king of the sources in the modern era in the last few years. And he sounds like he's going to pay a terrible price. I mean, that's basically the rest of his working life.
Later in the program, we'll talk to Fred Kaplan, military affairs columnist for Slate, about the sentencing of Bradley Manning. We're also trying to get Daniel Ellsberg to come back on the show today, who in a way was the Bradley Manning of his time. So stay tuned for that. But we'll continue to preview tonight's WNYC New York 1 Democratic mayoral primary debate, 7 o'clock tonight here on WNYC and our website and on New York 1 television on Time Warner Cable. And we'll continue with our three guests and your calls on the political season in general. We'll also get into Eliot Spitzer making new waves in the controller debate today. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And again, the mayoral primary debate on the Democratic side begins at 7 o'clock tonight on WNYC and New York 1. Now, we also have live streaming video on our website, courtesy of New York 1. That's really for those of you who don't have Time Warner, especially. And we will host a live simultaneous online chat during the debate, also at WNYC.org, complete with your comments and the always illuminating debate bingo, with squares like someone criticizes Bloomberg's third term and a candidate claims they played stickball growing up. So get your interactive bingo card on our website right now if you like and share it with your friends at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We even have a list up now of debate watching parties at bars and restaurants around the city if you want to do this face-to-face with some folks in various states of intoxication at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for all that stuff. Again, I'll be one of the questioners tonight, along with David Chen from the New York Times and my first three guests today from our debate partner, New York One, Errol Lewis, host of Road to City Hall, who will moderate tonight's debate, Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Pura Politica on their Spanish language station, New York One Noticias, and New York One political reporter Grace Rao. I want to shift to the controller primary debate, or primary, I should say, the race, between Scott Stringer and Elliot Spitzer. The polls are showing Spitzer with a double-digit lead, but over the weekend, all three major English-language dailies in the city endorsed Stringer in no uncertain terms. One, the Times, the Post, and the Daily News, and mostly they were denouncing Spitzer as a liar, a cheat, and someone who doesn't get along with people. Are you surprised that none of them landed in his corner for the force of his personality and his willingness to break some eggs for progressive change?
No, I'm not. I wasn't surprised. However, I'm surprised that while they are endorsing Stringer, they picked Spitzer as their front page picture, which doesn't help.
The tabloids, the news,
right,
and the
tabloids,
Post.
Which doesn't help Stringer that much, because his main problem right now is that voters don't know who he is. They don't know how he looks like. They don't know how he sounds. And that's a major roadblock that Stringer has with this campaign. I don't know how much those endorsements are going to help, because at the end of the day, those voters are going to go to the polling place and they're going to vote for that candidate or that name they are more familiar with.
Errol, that's some interesting media analysis from Juan there. Do you agree with it that maybe it helps Spitzer as much as Stringer if the Post endorsed Stringer but put Spitzer on the cover in heart pattern underwear?
Well, yeah, there's a way to overdo it. And I'm actually fascinated, as a former member of the Daily News editorial board. You know, we always prided ourselves and were always curious about, you know, whether or not we were really influencing voters when we took a stand for or against a candidate. This is an almost perfect sort of political science experiment, because you've got all of the dailies pushing in a very ferocious direction, not so much in favor of Stringer, but really just saying Elliot Spitzer is disqualified. He is absolutely unacceptable. And I am very curious to see if the voters and indeed the readers of all of these newspapers are going to follow the advice of these papers, or if they're going to say, you know, thank you for the information, we're going in a different direction. It's been known to happen.
Grace Spitzer is coming out today with some policy proposals for public housing to have panels of residents review any proposed sales of land around public housing projects to private developers, something Mayor Bloomberg's administration is planning to do. And Spitzer is strongly denouncing Bloomberg's idea of fingerprinting all public housing residents to make sure other people don't wind up living in their subsidized apartments. These are not typical controller policies, which usually have more to do with auditing the city's books and managing the pension funds. What do you make of this?
Well, I think this is a sign of what New Yorkers can expect if Elliot Spitzer does indeed win this race. He's somebody who has said from the get-go that he is going to transform this office the way he transformed the state attorney general's office, that he's going to use powers that he sees in that office that maybe other people haven't made use of. And by even delving into policy debates about issues involving public housing, he's signaling that he's going to be looking much further than just, you know, the city's pension funds and the audit functions of that office, to get involved in all sorts of things that we probably haven't seen a city controller do in the past. That may appeal to a lot of people. For some of the mayoral candidates, they may be concerned that if Elliot Spitzer indeed wins, that he is going to be involved in all sorts of business that past controllers have basically ignored.
Listeners, we'll get back to your calls in a minute with your suggestions of questions for tonight's mayoral debate. As I said earlier, I have already picked out two questions that I plan and hope to ask tonight that were submitted by some of you. So let's see what else you're coming up with. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll take some more of you on the air in a minute. And Errol, to Grace's point, I guess one of the questions for voters in the controller race becomes, do you like the idea of Spitzer as controller muckraking around in every corner of city government where he finds an outrage or a constituency? Will that add some extra firepower in government on behalf of New Yorkers? Or will he just cause more problems than he'll solve by being too contentious about too many things? That question about Spitzer, I think, is exemplified by these new proposals.
Well, you know, it's fascinating to me. I mean, unless you're a retiree, and, you know, there's not that many of them. There's a lot of them, but they're not going to be most of the voters. I'm not sure a crusading controller would bother anybody, to tell you the truth. I mean, if you're on the receiving end of it, that might be a problem. And I think we certainly heard from enough people in the financial and political establishment who obviously don't necessarily want him, sort of bothering them over the next 4 years. But, I don't know that New Yorkers have ever voted against somebody because they'd be, they'd
too activist.
Doing too much to shake up the city. I mean, when's the last time that happened?
Good
point. It didn't quite work out for Mark Green, but he came pretty close to being elected mayor.
And Juan, I mentioned all three English language dailies endorsing Stringer. El Diario, the biggest Spanish language daily, which I like to include when we talk about the big New York dailies. There are really four of them, including that. And you might also include Newsday. But they have endorsed in the public advocate primary, El Diario, Letitia James. I don't think they've endorsed yet for mayor. I will recall that in 2009 they endorsed Bill Thompson over Bloomberg in the general election and compared Bloomberg to Hugo Chavez in the process. And I don't think I've missed a controller endorsement. Have you seen one?
I don't think I've seen it either. But remember, they were comparing him to Hugo Chavez because of the way he overturned term limits. But to go back to your point about Spitzer and his proposals, with such a crowded field of candidates for mayor, the only way you're going to break into the political debate this year is by offering solutions to the general problems of New Yorkers, meaning all those issues that mayoral candidates are talking about. You're not going to break through talking about comptroller issues that nobody knows about. And basically, they are extremely boring. It's something to do with numbers, right?
Right, unless you're an accountant or a bank vice president. But politically, in terms of which more general issue he's diving into, Errol, do you think it's public housing he's highlighting? Because some of his base turns out to be low-income people of color, who are most of the residents of public housing. You know, he's got these big poll numbers among African Americans.
Yeah, that sounds like a leading question, Brian. Yes, I think, the fact that there were all of these other candidates who slept over at public housing, it may have dawned on somebody, and I kind of wonder why it never did before, that there are, 400,000-odd people living there. Let's say half of them are of voting age, roughly 200,000 voters, who have been shamefully neglected by campaigns in the past. I think it's a ripe opportunity for Spitzer or anybody else. And let's not count out Scott Stringer when it comes to public housing. He issued a very well-received, very prominent report just a few years ago about public housing, pointing out a lot of its problems. And he is going to try and compete with Spitzer for that very segment of the electorate that you just described, low-income people of color.
Era Lewis, Juan Manuel Benitez, Grace Rao, all from New York One, all questioners, along with me in tonight's Democratic mayoral primary debate at 7 o'clock. Susan in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hello, Susan.
Hi, Brian. I would love for you guys to ask the candidates their position and level of commitment to the funding of New York City Center for Animal Care and Control. The center has greatly expanded its volunteer program, and so there are hundreds of us, I'm one of the volunteers, who spend hundreds of hours helping to take care of these animals, and we live in fear that, somehow the funding's not going to come through or going to be revoked.
So it's about funding for animal care and control? Is that your main concern?
That's my concern, and it can be a very quick question. I just want to know if they've even thought about it. And if they have a position on the funding of the shelter system.
Susan, thank you. Randy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Randy.
Hi. My question has to do with affordable housing. And as I told the screener, I've lived in New York 20 years now, and I'm approaching retirement and middle income. And when I do retire, I will not be able to stay in the city. This will actually be my last, probably, mayoral election. And, they talk about affordable housing, but I really don't see anything that's going to help people like myself. And there, one of your people on the said something about there's not a lot of retirees, but There actually are, I think, a lot of retirees in New York City. But
oh, I missed that line if somebody said it. And absolutely there are, and there are going to be more as the years go on with, you know, the aging of the population in general in this country.
Exactly. And
so is, like it's
I say,
a housing?
I want to know. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Randy, is it, and while you clear your throat, is it a cost of housing issue primarily? Is that the cost of living in New York that you're referring to?
Yes, it is a cost of housing. Because I am in an apartment that is, it's not subsidized, but it's below market. And I have to leave it when I retire. And
I'm curious, Randy, would you be interested, if this actually comes to pass, this is a contentious proposal right now, to build a lot of, when they build a lot of these tiny apartments, if this actually happens, they're talking about micro apartments that might be like 300 square feet.
Right.
But the point being, part of the point being, to make things that are more affordable for New Yorkers who live alone, which is so many New Yorkers of various ages, is that something that would interest you in theory?
You know, in theory, maybe, but in practicality, if you if you're always having to push up your Murphy bed and pull out this to get to something, you know, it's for a person who is aging, that just doesn't work real well. You need a little bit more space than that. And I'm not talking about even a one bedroom, but, a studio of a decent size that you can move around in.
Randy, I'm going to leave it there. I certainly take the concern. Affordable housing for seniors, among others, in New York. Big, big issue. And Kat in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kat. You have a question to suggest?
Yes, Brian. My big issue with the Democratic candidates is I don't trust any of them to lead New York in a crisis. In a snowstorm, a transit strike, a blackout, a terrorist attack, I don't think any of them have the strength, the power to harness help from Washington and Albany. And I don't think any of them would really work well with the police commissioner. I mean, for all the grief that they give Ray Kelly, he has been able to harness the police and really help out the city and help put plans together.
So you feel that Bloomberg was good in a crisis?
I think some crises better than others. That one snowstorm was a disaster.
Right.
But I feel, listen, during a transit strike, I trusted him. I don't think I could say the same for Quinn or de Blasio or Lou or Weiner or anybody else.
Are you considering them the Republican candidates? If Joe Loda gets a nomination, he's running as a manager.
I think, listen, working people get the shaft all the time. I think that all of these Democratic candidates, they want to give too much to the unions that are supporting them. And that way of life, I hate to say it, it's going. No other working people can even buy the benefits.
But you're a registered Democrat, so you will likely vote in this primary on September 10th?
Oh, I'll be voting. You bet.
You leaning toward anybody? Considering the skepticism that you're coming on with this morning, are you leaning toward anybody as of now? I'm just curious.
Brian, I'm 32, and skepticism is the last thing that I want to have at this age, but I don't trust any of them to be a big leader for this city.
All right. Kat, thank you very much for your call. By the way, speaking of asking questions of the mayoral candidates, next hour we will begin our final round of New York City mayoral candidate interviews before the primary, and this time it's a call-in round. Most of the questions will come from you. Our guest today is going to be Republican hopeful John Catsimatidis, right after the news at the top of the hour, taking your calls. So we'll come back to that in a little while. Errol, you want to say one last thing on your way out the door about what people might expect tonight?
They can expect some fireworks. They can expect a lot of skilled questioning by some very good journalists. And I think this is going to be for a lot of people because it'll be their first look. I think they should come to it with an open mind. These candidates have been preparing for quite a while, as have we.
The questioner is David Chen from The New York Times. And the four of us who've been having this conversation, Grace Rao, political reporter for New York One, Juan Manuel Benitez, host of Pura Politica on their Spanish-language station, New York One Noticias, and Errol Lewis, host of Road to City Hall. The debate begins at 7 o'clock tonight on WNYC and New York One. And again, a reminder, we also have live streaming video on our website, courtesy of New York One, for people who don't have Time Warner Cable. And we will host a live simultaneous online chat during the debate at WNYC.org, complete with the always illuminating debate bingo. You can get your interactive bingo card right now at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer's show. Errol, Juan, Grace, thank you all. I'll see you tonight.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, later. Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us. Much more Brian Lehrer's show to come.